to Colossians chapter 3. I'd like us to consider a few thoughts from the first four verses of Colossians chapter 3 tonight. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For you are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with Him in glory. As we start a new year, it seems to me that the Lord so far has kind of been developing a fairly consistent thought or theme in the two or three messages that we've heard. If you were here for Watch Night, you heard Andy Hilton share some thoughts from Psalm 90. And Psalm 90 is the one that tells us to number our days. And he brought out some very practical applications from that passage in terms of recognizing our time is limited, recognizing there are things that the Lord would want us to accomplish, trying to discern what those things are and being diligent about using the time we have left to accomplish those things. And he gave an illustration that just kind of stuck with me. And he talked about a godly man who was walking through a college campus at Stanford University, and he noticed something that caught his eye, and it was a very, very ornate, beautiful bird bath. And it was a single piece of marble that had been carved, and yet it was virtually covered in vines and bushes, and it was pretty much hidden. It was something that his eye just happened to hit on. And he went on to talk about how much effort went into that and how it was basically wasted. And the application that this guy, I guess, sensed the Lord giving him is, Lord, I don't want to build bird baths. And so it was very much the thought process, what are we doing? What are we engaged with? Are we doing something that's of little eternal value, or are we doing something that has great eternal value? And I'm going to come back to the birdbath thing in a few minutes a little bit. And so then Ray spoke Sunday, and either that or Jeff put on his Ray suit. I'm not sure what it was, but so Ray was speaking from Hebrews 11 and 12, and he was reminding us to lay aside anything that hinders us, in this race, this limited time we have, to lay it aside. And he gave a great visual, when Justin came up and Jonathan came up, and Justin was carrying all this stuff, and he had this bag with, house and car and a big truck, and I can't remember what else was in there, but it was a bunch of stuff. And so again, the point was, are we being encumbered as we go about life, or are we really focused, really dialed in on what the Lord wants us to do? And so it kind of resonated with me, and what I shared last Wednesday night, it may have lodged in your mind in different ways, but what has kind of been my ongoing companion through a good bit of 2016 is, if you remember the circles, is how easy it is for me to get distracted by stuff out in that outer circle. And it's just so easy to all of a sudden get caught up with something and realize you're spending your time, your focus on things that really don't count. And so one phrase that came to my mind as I was just mulling over that was a phrase that we find here in these verses, in verse 4. And it says, when Christ, who is our life. And I really started thinking about that. Well, is that really true? And you might remember last Wednesday night, we did this thing. We did this rating, this self-assessment. Did you like that? Okay, well, let's do it again. I'm just kidding, but when we think about Christ being our life, how are you doing with that? On a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing with that? And that's what's just kind of been, I guess, gripping me and rattling around my head. And so I want to think about tonight. I want to just explore, what does it mean when he says, Christ, who is our life? I don't know about you, but me in the past, when I hear that, it's somewhat frightening. And I think it's because I'm not sure that I'm embracing that. I'm not sure I can stand and say, yeah, that's me. And so I want us to think about, what does it mean for Christ to be our life? Is it true practically? It's got to be true because He said it's true for believers. But practically, how is it true in our life? And so, as we look at the context here, we look at this whole section, hopefully we'll get a better understanding of both the magnitude of this thought and perhaps even why we are uncomfortable at times with this thought. And so I would like for us just to look at some of the things he says here and try to use that to help us understand what he means when he says, when Christ, who is our life. So the first thing is up in the first two verses. He talks about seeking things that are above, and then he says, set your affections on things above, not on things on the earth. So there is an intentional act that we are engaged with in, and I would say it's something we do every day. We set our affections. And in some cases, I think we get enamored for certain reasons with some things that may even be legitimate, but we carry it overboard. I'm bad about that. I can get zeroed in on something that I want to accomplish and spend a lot of time and energy only to step back years later and say, what was that all about? And so, this setting of our affections is something that's so important. And so, it gets back to the question that I asked you a little bit last week. What is it that gets you going in the morning? What is it that puts the skip in your step during the day? For me, it's easy for that to be a lot of stuff that probably shouldn't be all that important. You know, I was thinking as Ray was loading the weights in there, and I'm thinking, okay, my weights. And I started to bring literally my weights and have them in bags and let some of you guys try to bring them up here and then pull them out with signs on them. But I thought, man, that's getting pretty personal there. But you know, these things that occupy our time, and I'm not saying they're necessarily bad unless they really begin to be too important. So, what is it that gets you going in the morning? What is it that really thrills you during the day? Is it how well your kids are doing? There's nothing wrong with that. We're delighted when the Lord blesses us with children that follow the Lord, with children that are obedient, with children that get along. But we can make that our life. Is it how well your retirement accounts are doing? Is that what, you know, when the market's up, are you up? When the market's down, are you down? It's easy to get that way. Is it how well your ball team's doing? Guilty? Exactly. You know, it can ruin my day. In fact, it can ruin my week. And in the last 3 or 4 years, I've just been saying, that's not right. That is just so foolish. Is it the latest purchase that you made? Is that what gets you going in the morning? Is it that new car? Or maybe it's that new used car. What is it that really occupies our affections? And that's what I want us to think about. That's what I've been thinking about. Why do I get so enamored with these things? Why am I so easily diverted? And so where we set our affections is important, I think, in understanding what he means when he says, Christ, our life. And frankly, I was talking to one of my C-12 guys today, and we were just talking about, Kim had to take Bethany and Benson to the airport this morning and leave the house at 5 o'clock. And so as a good dad, I got up at 4:45 so I could tell them goodbye. And I got my shower, and Kim fixed me some coffee, and I settled down for my quiet time. And I had a wonderful time. An hour and a half fellowshipping with the Lord. And I was talking to this guy, and I'm like, how do believers make it without intimate fellowship with the Lord every day? How do we do that? And so when we think about Christ being our life, it's not going to happen unless we are plugging in and learning and talking to Him and listening to Him. And so that's a part of this setting our affections that we have to do. So we have to set our affections. It goes on, he says, to do that, for you are dead. Now, I'm sorry. I don't feel dead. And that's something I have struggled with my entire Christian life. These statements that say, you are dead. You're dead to sin. You're dead. And I'm like, I don't feel that. Why is it so attractive? Why does it pull me so much? Why does it seem like I'm so alive to it? And you may have a better explanation than I got. But I know this, Paul, who wrote this, also says, over in Romans 6:11, he says, reckon yourself. He uses a good southern term. Reckon yourself to be dead indeed unto sin, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord. It is something that we have to count to be true. And that means that we have to recognize when those thoughts are coming into our head that are leading us into that outer circle, we got to say, uh-uh, I'm supposed to be dead to that. That's supposed to not have any appeal or attraction to me. And I've got to treat it that way. So it's, again, it's part of this setting our affections, I think. We have to say, I'm dead to that. I'm not going to give in to that. I'm not going to allow that to draw me and turn back into the love of Christ. So we have to live as if that's true, and we have to make choices as if that is true. And this begins with controlling our thoughts. But then he makes a statement that I've honestly never dissected or given a lot of thought about. He says, you are dead and your life is hid with Christ in God. Now, what in the world does that mean? What does it mean that our life is hid with Christ in God? And I might be wrong, but I think if you kind of break that down a little bit, if our life is hid with Christ in God, then it means Christ is hid. Christ is currently hidden. We can't see Him. The world can't see Him. And the Scripture is very clear that there will be a day when He will be fully revealed. Right now, He's not revealed. Now, right now, the church is supposed to be doing a job of revealing Him, and people have a really confused idea of who Christ is, don't they? Because the church in general does such a bad job at revealing who Christ is. But the world can't see Him. And we can't see Him. And so I think that one component of this, and I'll get to the point of this in a few minutes, but one component of this is that Christ is currently hidden. So we don't see the full reality and glory of Christ, do we? We don't see it. And our life is linked to that and to that moment and to that revelation of Him and His glory. So notice over in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 8. It tells us this, that even we as believers don't see Him. It says, whom having not seen, you love. In whom, though now you see Him not, yet believing you rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. So we do not see Him. He is hidden. We do not have a full appreciation of Christ, do we? There's so much more than what we understand with our minds, with what we can understand by faith. We understand enough to understand He is truly amazing and wonderful and all that we need. So there's no excuse, really, for us not to have Him as our life. And yet, we're creatures of sight, aren't we? And so there is some difficulty from the fact that I can't see Him. And if I can't see Him, a lot of times I kind of act like He's just not there. He's just off in the distance. Now, we know this concept of Him being hidden. We have an entire book in the New Testament that is the what? The revelation of Jesus Christ. And it points to that future time when He will be revealed. He will be fully revealed. He will be revealed to everybody. And that's going to be quite a moment. And there's something about our life that is linked with that moment. When He will be revealed, there is something about our life that will take on a full manifestation. So as you go through the book of Revelation, you see this unveiling, this revealing of the exalted Savior. And we know that since His ascension, even though He's working, He's working as our high priest. He's not a visible presence here on the earth. But one day He will be. Now, the New Testament writers regularly draw attention to what they call His appearing or His revealing, His manifestation. In Revelation chapter 1, we read this, verse 7. Behold, He comes with the clouds and every eye shall see Him. That's going to be the revelation. No one will deny what they see. Many will fear, many will shake, many will quake when they recognize that this is God Himself being revealed. Matthew 24 tells us about this in verse 30. It says, "And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." And then in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 7 and 8, it says this, "And to you who are troubled, rest with us, when the Lord Jesus shall be revealed from heaven with His mighty angels." So we see that clearly Scripture presents Jesus as currently unseen, hidden, not revealed, and it presents a future time in which He will be revealed in His full majesty and glory. And so when Paul talks about our life being hidden with Christ in God, I believe he's saying that just as Christ will be revealed fully in the future, so our lives will be revealed fully in the future. You see, we are easily fooled. We think this is it. We live like this is it. We live like this is our life. This isn't our life. Our life will explode in glory when He is revealed in His glory. Well, let's look at another few verses. "That which is hidden will be revealed," and that will include us. Romans chapter 8. Starting at verse 18. Paul says, "For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of creation waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creature was made subject," or creation was made subject "to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of Him who hath subjected the same in hope, because creation itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." Now think about a few of those phrases. It says that in a future day, at that time when He is revealed, glory will be revealed in us. Who we are, what we are, will be totally transformed. It will be a glorious being. It talks about the manifestation or the revealing of the sons of God. Now, we're all sons of God. If you're a believer, you're a son of God, daughter of God, whatever you want to call it, okay, child of God. We've just got some pretty good disguises on, don't we? And at that time, those disguises are going to be gone. And I don't know what it's going to be. I think we'll recognize one another, but we are going to be glorious at that revelation. It speaks about the glorious liberty of the children of God. Look over at 1 Peter. We read one verse earlier, but I want to look at the surrounding verses. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. Because this also speaks of this fact that we are awaiting something. Something that's going to be unimaginable. He says, "Who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed at the last time, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, you're in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen ye love, in whom, though now you see him not, yet believing ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls. So he speaks here as looking forward with great anticipation to the hope that awaits us. And it's the hope of this glorious revelation. And it's not just Christ who's going to be glorious. We're going to be glorious. We're going to be made glorious in Him. And so it's like the things that we live here in this life, they are preparatory, but there is more than we can imagine awaiting us. In John chapter 3, verse 2, it says, "Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be." We don't know. I can't describe it to you in detail. I can't even give you a picture of it. We do not yet appear to be what we shall be. But we know that when He shall appear, then shall we be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. So there is going to be that moment when we will become what we were created to be. No more chasing those illusions. No more fooled by the foolish things. Now, there's an illustration from nature, and any illustration to try to make this come alive is going to fall so short, but you know it. And it's that little caterpillar walking along the ground, just kind of hoping it doesn't get stepped on, surviving, until at the right time he goes into that cocoon. You see, that's us now. That's us. And then at that magic moment, he bursts forth in glorious splendor, never to walk that path again. That's going to be us. Maybe God gave us that little picture so that we could begin to recognize that this is not our life. Now, there used to be a TV program. Some of you remember it. This is your life. And they would bring people on stage and they would, you know, have surprise guests. And this guest would be behind the curtain and he would say, "Yeah, I knew Steve when da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da." And I'm sitting there. And they bring this person out. Then they bring another one out. And this is your life. Well, guess what? This is not your life. This is not it. It awaits us. And we can't imagine what it's going to be. But we need to recognize that. We get caught up in building bird baths. Now, I want to say this. God may have called you and equipped you to make most excellent bird baths. And I don't want us to think about that illustration and demean any form of occupation. But it's, what do you do with it? If God called you and equipped you to carve that marble and create the most exquisite bird bath, are you using that as your platform for being an ambassador for Christ? That's what we're to do. Don't take from that illustration that, well, there are certain things that are just not worth doing. Now, that's not what we're talking about here. But we're talking about our purpose in doing it. Our purpose in being a school teacher, our purpose in being a fireman, our purpose in working at the post office, whatever it is that you do, that God has equipped you to do, are you pursuing His purpose in that? That's why Paul encourages us to seek those things which are above and set our affections on. And why is it so hard? Well, I think it's because we're sight hounds. Now, I have two dogs. One of them is a scent hound, and one of them is a sight hound. And you let Bentley out, who's half bloodhound, half beagle, and his nose is on the ground. And I don't know that he even sees. I think he could run into a tree because he's sniffing. And if he gets scent of something, he's going to keep going until he finds it or he wears himself out. Juba, on the other hand, is a sight hound. And so he has to see something for it to get his attention. And some of you know, you don't want him to see you in the wrong way. He's a big dog. All right? So we tend to be sight hounds. And we're walking through life, and we're catching sight of all kinds of things. And I know for me, I can just get so enamored with it. And one thing that I've learned about me over the past 10 years, it's confession time, I guess. When I was working in a structured environment, I didn't see this as much. But when I changed roles and had a little bit of time, I began to recognize, in hindsight, that I could set my goal on. So I could set my heart on something. I could become pretty intent with something. So, for example, for about 5 years, after I was not having to work a 8-to-5 job, I had some time during the day. And Bert innocently one day said, "Hey, you want to go play golf?" I said, "Sure. Why not? I've got some time." And, yeah, Randy's laughing. And so I went and played golf. And I enjoyed it. And it wasn't but a month or so later, I'm playing in like 99 degree weather, and I'm having fun. And I'm like, huh. Well, then I needed some new clubs. Because, well, honestly, my clubs were like 20 years old. One day I swung, and the grip just came right off the club because it was dry rotted. So, you might have been. You might have gotten hit. And so I got pretty enamored with playing golf. And I'm a pretty competitive guy. Yeah, you know. And so I remember thinking when I first started playing, you know, I think if I could average an 85, I'd be really happy. Well, I had just set a goal, hadn't I? And I started pursuing it. And then it got to where it was every week I was going to play golf. And then there were a few where I'd go out there twice. I would go play by myself because I could finish a round in 2 hours if nobody got in my way. And, you know, after about 3 years of playing, 4 years of playing, I kept my scorecards and I kept a spreadsheet. And lo and behold, I was averaging 85, and I wasn't happy about it at all, because there were times where you'd shoot in the 90s, and there were those few times where I broke 80, and boy, I was on top of this. It's an easy game. And I look back at it now, and I think, how stupid, how absolutely foolish I was. And I'm not demeaning. Golf can be an enjoyable thing. It can be a relaxing thing. But I was obsessed. I was like, and what was it? It was pride. It was pride. And I've got other things that I've done the same thing with. I've got a gun collection. And I'm going to have to do something with that. In 2017. Because I look at it and I'm like, I'm not going to get rid of all of them. But I got some that have never seen a bullet that I know of. They're simply, they're bird baths. It's like if you went out and collected bird baths. Okay? And so it occupies a lot of time and mental energy, but it occupies my affections is what it does. And it gives me a skip in my step. When I find one that I really want and I'm able to negotiate the deal and I'm waiting for that to come in and it comes in and I'm like, ooh, look what I got. I've got one like nobody else has. And for, you know, 2 or 3 days, it kind of puts a skip in my step. And then you're on to find something else to put the skip in your step. And isn't that how the world works? You see, it won't bring satisfaction. I'm almost 62 years old. I want you to listen to me. Right through here. I want you to listen to me. You will not be satisfied. It won't happen. You get that Corvette. You won't be satisfied. I remember, again, another, when I was in college, I convinced my dad to buy me an MGB. Convertible, two-seater, cool. Man, that was my dream car. For about a month. About a month. And then, all of a sudden, a Porsche really looked like the thing I wanted to have. And so, these things don't bring satisfaction and contentment. When Christ, who is our life, you'll never be disappointed. You'll never come up empty. So, what does it mean when he says, when Christ, our life shall appear? I think he's saying that everything that's really important is wrapped up in him. Number one, he should be our purpose. When we get up in the morning, our purpose should be, what do you want me to do today? How do you want me to do it? How can I represent you? It doesn't mean you quit your job. He might lead you to do that, but it doesn't mean that. But when you go in that door, how can I be your ambassador today? What does it look like? Help me to be so in tune with you that I don't miss the opportunities. So he should be our purpose. But more than that, he is our source of life. In that picture he paints in John 15, he the vine and the branches, and we're attached to the vine. And he says these words, he says, without me, you can do a few things. We can do nothing. We don't believe that. We think we can do quite a bit. Just ask us. But the things that really count, we've got to have Him feeding us, guiding us, empowering us, shaping us. Are you living your life on your effort, or more on your effort and energy? Or are you living your life actively, conscientiously, dependent on Him? When Christ, who is our life, He's the source of anything worthwhile that we can accomplish. And then finally, He will be the one with whom our fullness of life is ultimately realized. At that moment, we don't know what it's going to be. But we're going to look back. I think we're going to look back and we're going to say, oh my goodness. Why was I so foolish? Why did I do that? Why did I get caught? Why did I spend time with that? So how are you doing? Is Christ your life. I've got a lot of work to do. I've got a bit of dismantling I got to do. But as we begin to draw our substance, our identity, our being from Him, then we really begin to experience this life as it was meant to be. And I just can't imagine what that's going to be. When we are truly, fully glorified beings with Him forever. But that's what our promise is. Thank you.